Yo, Short Box Nation, this is Botter clocking in with a very quick announcement to make before we get on with the show. I'll be in Chicago attending C2E2, and if you'll be in Chicago attending the convention too, it means that you have a very unique opportunity to attend a live podcast show like never before. I'll be hosting a comic podcast crossover live show on Friday, April 26th. I'm going to be joined by very good friends of the show and frequent guest co-hosts like Chris Hacker from the Oblivion Bar podcast and Greg Ligtig from the First Issue Club. We're recording a live podcast show that's celebrating the best comics of the year so far. We're going to talk about the creators that are absolutely crushing it. And considering the people involved with the panel, you can expect a great time. You can expect the typical brand of comedy and entertainment. If you ever heard any of the other episodes where Chris and Greg have been guest co-hosts, you can expect that on steroids. So once again, if you're attending C2E2 this weekend and you're looking for something to do or you need a break from the convention floor and standing in lines, I highly encourage you to come sit in for this live podcast show taking place the Friday morning of the convention at 11:15 a.m. I'll have links to the room and the rest of the panel information in the show notes. So check that out if you'll be in Chicago. Come on out, sit in on the panel, and have a good time. Hopefully I get to meet you. With that being said, let's get this show started. You, Short Box Nation, welcome to a special bonus episode this week. And if you're tuning in for the first time, welcome to the show. My name is Botter, and technically, we weren't going to drop an episode this week, but instead of leaving you empty-handed, Ed had a great idea to re-release this episode right here, which is from 2019. It's a George Pérez artist spotlight we did in episode 263. George's remarkable career was the subject of the 9th installment of our now long-running artist spotlight series. And much like the man himself, his career was a lot of fun to dissect and discuss. He's been on our mind a lot since leaving this physical realm 2 weeks ago, and we know he's left a giant hole in the hearts of many comic fans, and not just for all of us here on the show. So once again, this one's dedicated to George, and we hope you enjoy this throwback episode. We'll be back next Wednesday for a brand new episode dedicated to the powerhouse comic couple, Mike and Laura Allred. If you're a fan of or familiar with Mike and Laura's work on titles like Madman, Silver Surfer, Batman 66, and so forth, or if you want to hear about a renowned couple who have worked in comics for years, make sure you tune in next Wednesday. That's all I got to say. Let's go ahead and get this episode started so you can enjoy it, and me and the crew will catch you next week, all right? Peace.
The year 1985, DC Comics releases Crisis on Infinite Earths, a watershed that not only rectified continuity issues in the DCU, but spelled the heroic end of one of its flagship characters. In the story, Barry Allen, aka The Flash, sacrifices his life by running fast enough to create the energy needed to save multiple universes.
Flash, what's your position? Do you see the cannon?
I'm in position at the checkpoint.
The power source.
It's destroying the multiverse every second it functions.
I've scanned the device for possible pathways to up.
There's no time, Batman. It's gotta be now. You know I'm right. Bruce, could you tell Iris I'm doing this for her? For everyone. Even you, Bruce. Thanks for being a great friend.
Doing what, Flash?
Pass that along to Clark and Diana, would you? Tell them I never gave up hope.
Flash, do you copy? Flash. Barry. Run, Barry. Run.
Time to save the world. My name is Barry Allen, and I am... I was the fastest man alive.
The artist responsible for crafting these images was known as a pace setter and a heroic speedster in his own right. He has created and destroyed multiple universes with the flick of his pencil. He is the titanic engineer of layout design and the unsung professor of powerful cover art. He is George Bedex.
Oh, the angriest intro
Man.
Ever.
Dude, it's not like an hour was recorded.
I know.
Yo, this motherfucker's acting like look, 10 of the best minutes ever recorded. It was like, we lost it in the ether, guys. We lost it.
The magic is gone.
Look how sweaty you are.
Lost
Damn.
All of my...
That's the first time that's happened. So.
Look,
Bonner just got Bonner just got diabetes look. In like 5 seconds. It's like every sweaty. Disease that a brown guy is susceptible to. So, Bonner is caught.
I just lost all that great Ramona flea market talk.
Oh, I know. We can
I feel like I just had my best jokes in that lost intro.
You've had better.
Yeah, for sure.
Look, we don't want to. We're your friends. We don't want to tell you, but
you know, are stupid.
They can't all be winners, kid.
Ashley, you got any crazy stories?
Oh shit!
Stories of George.
All of that was lost.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that's all right, dude.
Look, Ashley's whole plug was out.
Look, Ashley's great,
the
you know.
UFO Welcome Center.
UFO story.
Harambe.
And I'm never going to.
Well.
God.
Okay, for those of you who are
kids,
listening, I'm going to tell you right now, this is
hit
the best
record.
Part of the show.
I know.
So you will
Bonner's
never.
Leaving the table.
Yeah, he just left the show.
Okay. Walk it off.
I quit. Right.
This is garbage, see? So, our illustrious leader, Bonner Milligan, who
okay,
I'm going
dude.
To throw completely under the bus.
Yeah, different name.
Our illustrious leader, Schmader Milligan, decided to start the show without hitting record on the actual recorder. And I
didn't plug it in either.
I apologize to everybody because that was probably some of the best recording we've ever had.
Lost.
And none of you will know that the pure,
I know.
Pure, delicious gold. Wait, so they didn't hear me talk shit about...
No, Warren got a... You
he
know,
got a pass?
He got a pass.
Oh, man. Well,
bring it back.
Yeah. I have no problem saying it. No. So it's funny because we're all of us, and by all of us, I mean just Bonner, are a little bit crestfallen because he thinks that he failed as a host. Justifiably so, he did. But it's all good because we're here to talk about George Perez, guys.
Yeah. Perez. That's
Perez.
Something I didn't
Perez.
Know. Perez.
All right, good.
Oh.
Good. Okay.
That's something I didn't know.
When I saw that, when I was watching that interview with him,
remember.
I said, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Is this dude saying it wrong? And I'm right. And I was like, nah, no way that sci-fi is going to let this slide.
I watched three of those and the beginning of everyone's like,
a point, right?
Thanks for pronouncing my name right.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this
yeah,
must
right.
be a sore spot.
Yeah. So Perez.
Yeah. Who says Prez?
Me.
No.
Perez. I say Perez.
Yeah, it's Perez.
Perez. According to like this sci-fi interview.
Look, guys, I can get fucking Spanish on you and say all you motherfuckers are saying it wrong.
The emphasis.
Jorge Perez, that's his name.
The emphasis is different
right,
from
right.
what I heard.
Did you say
emphasis?
Yeah. The emphasis is on the wrong syllable.
All right, we saved it. We saved this intro. Good job, guys.
There you go. I'm doing the heavy lifting again, Vodder. You're welcome.
You.
Jesus
Yo,
Christ.
Real quick, man. Oh, man. Welcome to episode 263 Short Box Nation.
It's not recording.
Yo, stop.
Oh.
Stop. Man, I almost said, yeah, go home. Yep, we're good.
I'm going
we're
to
good.
Sweet Theory. Fuck you guys.
You'll I want to welcome.
You'll see my wife there.
I want to welcome the returning, the longtime fans and listeners. I want to welcome our new listeners joining us for the first time. And in case you guys aren't familiar with our voices, my name is Bonner Milligan. I'm your host. Mm. I got my man Cesar Cordero here
Peace.
With me.
Peace.
I got Emin Danzart here with me. And I've got Ashley Lanny Hoy.
Hey.
I also want to go ahead and thank the Short Box patrons, man, because this episode is brought to you by our Short Box patrons who are supporting us out there on Patreon.com, specifically the True Believer tier. That is the tier that we have on Patreon that allows them to vote for episode topics, and they ended up voting for George Perez, a great choice in my opinion, for this particular artist spotlight. If this is your first time tuning into the show, period. Our Artist Spotlight episodes are a very special one to us. We take the time to dedicate a whole episode to a fantastic comic book artist and sometimes even writers. Today, you know, we're going to focus on George Perez, one of the most, you know, monumental, fundamental artists.
To say he's prolific is kind of an understatement. Mm-hmm. The dude was a titan. Like, and that's going to come into play later, and I'm using that.
A teen titan?
Right. I'm using that. Here we go. I'm using that.
I would have got... shit on for using that joke. Well, you see, I'm pointing out the bias.
Well, I mean, I'm using it as a segue and not as actual material. That's why. This is the dude, I say that with every awareness and intention because he did work on Teen Titans, but you'll find out as you go on listening to the episode that the man's accolades are well justified and well deserved.
Well said. And the intro real quick, man. I want to go ahead and give a round of applause to our man, Cesar Cordero, for that fantastic intro.
I'm clapping and then, for myself.
And special short box member, a member in honor, Chris Millbrook, man.
Oh, yeah,
Chris
Millbrook. Yeah, he helped me out with that.
The cameo with I texted. I was like, yeah, I can't wait for the new season of Flash.
He will not let me live down that for the Daredevil promo.
He got to play Daredevil.
He got to play Daredevil. And I was like, yes, a very fat Daredevil. Yes.
Oh, fat Daredevil.
And then he's like, so I've been the man without fear, and now I've been the fastest man alive. And I'm like, damn, yes, you have been the fat man without fear and the fat.
It's like when the comic book guy dressed as the Flash.
Right.
Oh, shit. Hey, real quick. Oh, the shit talking has begun.
There goes the episode picture right there, baby.
That's it.
I am the Flash, the fastest man alive.
I have been both the man without fear and also the fastest man alive. I just stole your pretzel.
No, so shout out, C. Thank you so much for that.
Intro. I couldn't have done it without him, man.
Yeah. Shout out to Chris, Short Box.
He knows that.
And I want to say, man, if you end up enjoying this episode, it's your first Artist Spotlight episode. We've done up to, I think we're on number 7 or 8 by now, but we've done other artists such as Jack Kirby. We've done most recently Todd McFarlane.
We did a curatorial.
Yep, Alex Ross before that. We even had a special 2-part Stan Lee episode that still to me is probably some of our best episodes. So.
We try to keep it, you know, diverse, and you know, we'll jump across the pond if we have to.
Yep.
You know?
I will say, even if you are not familiar with George Perez, you know, or if you're varying degrees of your familiarity. You're about to be. So don't worry about if the name isn't too familiar with you or if you're not.
That's kind of the point of the Artist Spotlight, is that when we record these, it's almost better for you if you don't know who this person is, because you get a chance to maybe get exposed to an artist that you had never heard of before. And you can, you know, based on listening to an hour or some change about us talking about this guy or gal, you'll find it's worth your time to maybe peruse, deeply into their tomes of work. So that's basically the point of the show. Like, if you know who George Perez is, great. You're going to enjoy it. If you don't know who George Perez is, even better. You'll get a chance to listen to us gab about this incredible individual and make up your own mind as to whether or not you want to jump into the damn pool.
Well said. We did all the homework for you, so sit back and enjoy.
Just enjoy the ride.
Speaking about homework, during anyone's research process, anyone come across like anything interesting or really like fascinating or just new to you? Because I'm assuming at this table we're all super familiar with George Perez. I think we've even personally had some like run-ins with him.
Real quick, have you guys all met him before?
Yeah,
super
nice. Yeah, right. Yeah. I think it's safe to say we've all met George. Mm-hmm. Okay,
always so, Hawaiian shirt on.
Yeah. Yep.
Hey, all right. Interesting fact that I learned was
he actually drew the shirt.
His wife actually makes all his shirts, all those Hawaiian shirts. I did not know that. That was pretty cool.
Yo, this is Botter. Sorry for interrupting this episode, but I'll keep it brief. I wanted to let you know about a massive sale we have going on over at the Short Box Store on all of our merchandise and apparel. That's theshortboxstore.bigcartel.com. You can now save 20% off your entire order using the discount code YO, YOO. So if you've been waiting for the right time to finally buy that gauntlet snapback, or if you ever wanted to buy any of the shirts you see me wear on the podcast, well, now's your chance to get them for a steal. We still have a few sizes left of everything, but they won't last long, and once they're gone, they are gone. And then I mentioned that all of our apparel is screen printed on high quality material. None of that heat transfer or direct to garment stuff. Our shirts are some of the most comfortable ones you'll ever wear, and the hats look even better in person. So wear your support for the Short Box Nation proudly, knowing that you're going to look damn good doing it. Get to theshortboxstore.bigcartel.com as soon as you can, and don't forget to use that discount code YO, YOO, to save 20% off your entire order. All of this information can be found in this episode's show notes if you want to get there faster. Thanks for not pressing fast forward. Now back to the show.
For me, I didn't realize he, like in the 70s, he worked on
Marvel did these black and white magazines, The Deadly Hands of Kung Fu, which kind of introduced characters like Shang-Chi and Iron Fist. And he did, you know, work for them. And I had no idea. And like I said, I was reading an interview about it. And he said that even though he wasn't really privy to like the numbers, he said that that book was actually outselling Conan, which was another another one of their black and white kind of bigger issued format magazines they were doing at the time. But even then, like we talk, when we see artists that have this long a career, we can kind of see the beginning, and some of it can be rough, you know. And then, but his stuff was spot on. Even back then, it was like this. We were talking about this earlier, but it's like it's one of those guys that seemed like he always had it. You know, he always had that talent right from jump.
Yeah, well said. Ashley, what about you? Come across anything interesting?
So I watched a lot of videos. Usually when we do the research, I'll just kind of read over stuff. And I was watching the videos. And so is it like we briefly went over it. So it's not George Perez. It's George Perez.
Perez.
Yeah. Perez.
Perez.
Yeah. George Perez. Okay, so that's how you're supposed to say it.
Yeah. Because the accent's on the E.
Okay.
First E.
Okay. I didn't know that, but that, I mean, I don't know. I just went over, I was just scrolling through all the stuff that he did. And I mean, I was familiar with a lot of it, but man, that guy worked a long time.
Yeah. A part of me, almost considered like, I was like, if there's anyone that deserves a two-parter, like,
man,
George, I mean, he just officially announced retirement this year, right? January.
Right.
Yeah.
I found out that, you know, he was kind of known in the business for setting the pace, regarding, hey, how fast can an artist draw? Which is a little unfair because not every artist is as good as George and can do what he does and fit like universes, literally can fit universes on a single comic book board. You know, like he was known for that. And it's almost like if he was like the speed on a speedometer, it would have been way over like 120 and the speed limit's 65, you know, like dude is going full run, like flat, just sprinting all these, like, all right, done. All right, done. All right, done. And then, you know, DC or Marvel's kind of looking at their other artists like, you fucking scrub. You guys are scrubs.
Yeah, especially considering all the detail, especially in his early work, how much detail
absolutely
he put in the panels. That's incredible.
He had sort of a Mobius kind of level of detail. As far as like trying to fit a bunch of stuff in, not they definitely have completely different styles, but as far as like using all the space available on a comic book board, like you can't say that when you look at a George Perez like
piece. Just it's the like, quality of the line,
right? Like you're like, oh god, you're almost tempted to say it's too busy until you actually look at it and you're like, oh my god, like it's like, oh, it's like it almost gets to Where's Waldo level busyness. Almost.
No and rubble then, over feet. No like little smokes.
Man. Right.
No shortcuts.
Right.
I didn't say who I'm talking about.
No.
No, I was agreeing with you. I learned that he designed Lex Luthor's the battle suit.
The green and purple.
Yeah. And it was for, you know, the toy line, the Superpowers collection. But I think they liked it so much, they just started using it within DC Comics continuity. And then I also learned that Patty Jenkins actually credits Perez's work on Wonder Woman as being a big influence for the movie itself. So I was like, damn. You know?
Yeah, I was watching an interview, and I think it was the one he sent me. He said he was so thrilled to see the Amazons in the movie that were ethnically diverse, because he thought that made the most sense. You know, you're going to have like someone from, you know, African American descent, Asian descent. So he thought that was a really, really cool grab from what his, you know, his vision of Wonder Woman is.
I wanted to circle back to Cesar's point, because I think this is one artist that we can say, I think each one of us has had a meeting with him or an experience with him. I wanted to just kind of get everyone's experience. Ashley, when did you first meet George Perez?
So I used to do a ton of conventions. I used to do maybe like 11 or 12 a year. And he would do a lot of them. And I got to say, like, he's always so happy.
Yeah.
And I would be sitting at a table and just see these lines of people, like these big dudes holding like stacks of books. And I would just be like, there's no way he can keep this up all day. Just like the smile on his face. He's got to sign like 15 books for one dude. And he's just always like, you know, in his bright shirt and big smile on his face. Like I never saw him when he looked like over it.
Yeah.
He's always so positive.
He's the opposite of when I met Darwin Cook.
Oh, shit.
Exact opposite.
What do you want, Ed?
You already knew Ed's name.
You might remember, see, CrossGen, that label.
Oh, yeah. Out? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
He was kind of doing work for them at the time, and they had like a giant, because I think they were based out of Tampa when they first started, and they had a mammoth display at a MegaCon when I was a kid. And I think I met him there, and he
That's
was
awesome.
Like the... He was kind of like the centerpiece because he was the big,
oh yeah,
the big name. Yeah. He was kind of doing their like a source book that they had to kind of connect this universe they were trying to build. But yeah, always super friendly. Like Ashley said, this is something that I've read. It's like this is something even like when his retirement post. Like I've been doing comics since after high school. I've lived a dream life. So you know, don't feel bad for me. This is. It seems like he was always happy, and he kind of appreciated his career and all the things he's done with it. So, and you could tell, and on top of doing all this work, you know, a lot of the bigger artists don't do every convention out there. And he seemed to be like a big, you know, road guy. He always seemed to be at every convention.
It seems like he is very completely aware mm-hmm. of what he has done,
yeah.
but also who he is.
He's still not modest,
right? Not insecure. Like just basically like, yeah, no, I'm doing what I want with my life and it's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, like it's great.
I think we've all probably also probably donated to, at least I know for me, anytime I've met him, it's usually to maybe sign. I think I had him sign like Avengers and JLA and all he wanted was like, hey man, if you got a few bucks, feel free to donate to, what is it? The Heroes Initiative.
Yeah. Yep.
So
yep.
I think that's why maybe he's never been negative towards someone that comes up with like a stack of 10, you know, yeah. as long as you're donating to this
and
cause.
He's in that, he kind of fit that really good window of where he's an artist that actually received a lot of royalties and a lot of
yeah.
things like that. Where
And
like
he's willing to pass it on too.
Yeah, and his previous really generation cool. were kind of left to their own
yeah,
that, devices. So
that might be something.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry.
No,
I had learned that he's like co-chairman of the board mm-hmm. of the that Heroes Initiative. So yeah. I guess that I was always wondering why is it always this one? I mean, other than it just being a good cause, but started yeah. finding out more about the background. I'm sorry, C.
Yeah, no, I was going to share my story. Rob Jones, who we all know,
yeah.
This is kind of funny. We were at MegaCon and there was George Perez. Perez. And I was like, oh my God. Oh my God, there he is. And Rob's like, oh dude, you should totally get your this is Rob. Yeah. He was like, oh dude, you should totally get your portfolio and show it to him.
Oh Jesus.
And Rob was like Dave Koresh in those days. And he could convince anybody of anything. And I was like,
yeah.
You really think so?
Go show this to Neil Adams.
Right.
Love it.
Bro, what? I was such a fresh faced, doe eyed young
just
man.
Cut off my hand after that.
Oh, dude. So I was like, well, I mean, I don't really got much. And he's like, dude, that's how you get it done. So I was like, all right. So I like a freaking Jamook wait in line.
Oh, no.
And there's George. And he's like, hey, how's it going? Oh. And I was like, hey, George. And before I could say anything, he kind of saw the portfolio and he was, it's funny. You can always tell like when someone's being nice.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get that. Like I didn't get a look, glance at the portfolio, look back at me and be like, oh, I'll humor you.
Yeah.
He goes, is that your work? And I said, yeah. He goes, let me see it. And what am I going to say? No.
Yeah.
You know, God says, show me your things. I'm like, no, Lord. So he looked at it and he gave me like actual artistic advice, not like, hey, kid, well, you know, you're going places. Keep it up and I'm sure you'll get a job at DC Comics. Ding. No.
Or the opposite. Just right. Totally trash.
Right. Yeah. He was just like, okay, this is good. If you want to look, always draw eyes like this because if you don't, they won't look three dimensional. See, look, I'm going to put one line here. Boop, and now that adds a third dimension. And all I did was boop, add a line. And I was just like, holy shit. Like, and everyone behind me was kind of like, what's this guy doing? Why is he here? He fucking brought his portfolio. I'm trying to get my book signed for my little brother who has cancer. So, hey, guy hogging up George Perez's time.
Ooh.
Get the fuck out of the way. Meanwhile, I'm sitting here like, yes, Lord, tell me. Speaketh unto me thy wisdom of three-dimensional eyeballs.
Oh, my
and
God.
But he was that's legit. Awesome. Like, he was real. Like, yeah. He's like, good? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, all right. And then, like, that's when he was like, hey, Did you want me to sign anything? I was like, yeah. And I had like my Crescent Infinite Earth like comic. And he's like, all right, well, if you want to donate, blah, blah, blah. I was like, yes, I will do that.
I've been to a lot of cons, and George Perez has probably been at 95% of them.
Yeah.
95%. And I have never... It's just like you could... His table is just fun, man.
You
like,
see the shirt, you know.
Dude.
Yep.
Even like his handler is like having a good time, like helping him out. Like he, I think I've seen him like hug plenty of like strangers. I think, you know, signed as much as he could.
He's like really genuine.
Yeah, he is.
His appreciation.
Yeah, he was at what was the name of
the Hall of Heroes?
Hall of Heroes Con.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Super approachable. I think I'd asked him for like an interview and he was like, you know, I don't really do that, but I would be more than happy to sign or even sketch anything you got. And to his point, I mean, even that sci-fi series.
He was also kind of ramping down a little bit.
Yeah, which is fair. Even like that sci-fi series, the videos I sent you guys, I mean, they were all 5-minute pieces. Mm-hmm. So I think to maybe C's a point, like he's just, yo, he's busy, man. Like, if you want to find out more about me, go read a book about me, you know? Like, that's kind of what I imagine.
He seems like the type that doesn't really want to talk about himself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like a lack of ego.
Yeah.
Very strange in this business.
We just did.
We're all artists.
We just did Todd McFarlane.
You're right. Yeah, right? Oh, my God. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned Neil Adams' name. And then I was reading this George Perez Storyteller's book. Published by Dynamic Forces. It's a really good book. It's just all about George and his legacy and stuff. Neil Adams was one of the first comic book artists that gave him like, really broke it down to him like, hey, your art is interesting, but it's nowhere near yet. I think in the book he mentions or he quotes that Neil Adams told him like, your work might be good enough for DC, but not for Marvel at this point.
That's awesome. I love Neil Adams for saying that shit.
And sometimes I'm like, yo, how long has Neil Adams been around? Like, because that's not the first time I've heard
the beginning
legend
of time.
Yeah, Neil Adams was making editing points.
He told him that like 5 years
Ten
ago.
Commandments. He's like, I like this. I don't like this.
Yeah.
Change the word on this.
I think what George had going for him early on was a dynamic panel layout. That was the one compliment he got. But as far as like everything else, it could have used a lot of work.
He's got it because, I mean, he started pretty much right after high school.
He was saying not only did George get married young, but he always knew I'm going to do this professionally. Like that is my life's goal.
Yep.
Whatever I have to do in the meantime, I will. I think in the book, they definitely talk a little more about those early years. He got a job at a bank and he just still treated like drawing as the second job. He just went home and drew. And then eventually he teamed up with Rich Buckler, but he knew, he was like, you know what? The bank was whatever. I just needed it because I needed to pay bills.
Yeah.
I wanted to jump into like a quick recap of like the big moments in his career. And, you know, we don't have to spend too much time on it, but I just want to kind of level set for anyone listening. And it's not too familiar with some of the bigger things. So I'm just going to go through this quick little career milestone that will kind of continue the discussion from an artistic standpoint. George Perez was born 1954, South Bronx, New York. The parents from Puerto Rico. He's got a brother 1 year.
Holla.
He had a brother 1 year younger than him named David. They both, got into comics around the same time, and they were both kind of passionate about drawing comic books younger. In 1973, I'm just going to fast forward around, but in 1973, he worked with Rich Buckler as his assistant, and he got his first pro comic book art appearance in a 2-page backup story in Astonishing Tales number 25. It was printed in August 1974. And that this 2-page backup story was about Rich Buckler's character that he made, Deathlok. So this was not only the first appearance of Deathlok, but also George's first pro comic book artwork. 1974, to Ed's point, Deadly Hands of Kung Fu. He co-created the character White Tiger in Deadly Hands of Kung Fu number 19 with Bill Mantlo.
And White Tiger was the first Puerto Rican
superhero.
Represent.
Yeah. Kung Fu fighting.
I'm going to hear that a lot this episode, and I'm digging it.
Dale, Jorge, dale.
Real quick, George's list of like co-creations, to I think, Ed, once again, to your point, his royalty game, with the amount of characters he made, man, he had it good.
I see, papi, I see.
1975, his first work on Avengers of Avengers number 141 was out in 1975. He spent the rest of the 70s kind of bouncing around between different Marvel titles, including Creatures on the Loose, Man-Wolf, The Inhumans, and Fantastic Four. But around 1975 is when he did that early run of Avengers. And if I remember right, those were some of my earliest issues too, man. Fast forward to 1980, he started drawing for DC.
Dude, hold on. I got it.
Yeah, go ahead.
That's like... I think I sent you a picture a while back where I was like on this Avengers kick. It was right after Endgame mm-hmm. had come out, and I was like, I sent you a screenshot of like the Korvac saga.
Oh my God.
And you were like, yes! You were like, oh shit. You were like,
this dude's into the Korvac?
Oh, what the fuck?
Yeah. My research the whole time was like, damn, I forgot he did this. Yeah. Oh, damn, I forgot he did this right. for this many years. And the Korvac saga got brought up, and I remember that. That's right. So yeah, I mean, to your point, around 19, you know, that those mid 1970s when he was doing Avengers, that was one of the big. That's when we started seeing his ability to do these stories with multiple characters.
And you'd hear the just to go back before we go jump into his DC stuff, even Stan Lee first saw his work and he compared him to like Sal Buscema and
Romita. Oh damn, that's cool. And that's a hell of an honor.
He was kind of still working, but he was working on a few titles at once, and he was asking. He was basically Stan Lee. Basically, like wanted to give him more work, but he's already working on like four books. So it's like,
hey, Julio, how about another one?
But he said like when he first saw his work, he thought of Buscema, and that during that time he was still very kind of Kirby Buscema,
sure,
because that you pretty much had to draw like that
house style
Marvel, yeah.
Yep.
And feel free to jump in if you guys have anything to add. 1980, he started drawing for DC, started to work on Justice League, but it was around the new Teen Titans that. I feel that, I mean, it's pretty much safe to say, I think that's what really put his name on the spotlight was that new Teen Titans series with Marv Wolfman.
Marv, and my boy.
This series was launched as an answer to, you know, Marvel's X-Men series. And mm-hmm. I think around that time was the Claremont and Burns run, too. So this was meant to be an answer to that. And it did fantastic.
Oh, yeah. So, he said it was, I was reading like some interviews with him, and he said it was, he wasn't really excited about it at first. It was kind of like a favor because mm-hmm. he wanted to work on, you know, Justice League.
Yeah.
And but he said that even though Teen Titans have had a little bit of history, they didn't really have any success to that point. They were pretty much like sidekicks put together in a group. But he said that it was exciting because this was kind of like, oh, I get to kind of start something from scratch from the beginning. And if it does well or if it fails, it's on Marv and myself. It's not, you know, we're not relying on like history or like a nostalgia thing. This is like a whole new deal. He said only till like issue 8, he started realizing there was something special about this book. So,
you know, one of the earliest, I think, memories I have of our like initial friendship was, I think I mentioned like I really liked George's work. But I think I made a comment like, man, you could look at his work on Teen Titans and Avengers and there's so many similarities. And you were like, well, yeah, he draws everyone Puerto Rican or Jewish. but that joke has a kernel of truth because in that storyteller's book, George himself says like, yeah, I wanted them to look like me. Like, I think Cyborg was the character that he was like, you know, I really kind of saw myself in Cyborg a lot. Yeah. So, I mean, you kind of notice some things about it. But ever since you said that, every time I read, you know, something he draws, I'm like, yeah.
I think that's one of his strengths, too, is like he's really draws ethnicities well.
Oh, yeah.
You can tell.
I love the way he draws Scarlet Witch.
Yeah. You know, so that's the thing about that, man. Like, how
it's
many
not like
artists,
a white guy with a brown
right,
color
like, how many,
going over him.
How many artists, they're all from New York, right? They all live there. And if they're not from New York, they ended up moving there because of work or whatever. Mm-hmm. They see fucking everybody there and yet didn't really draw them the way they actually look, right? And I guess that's where I was making that. I mean, it was a joke. It wasn't meant to be taken literally for everybody who's out there that's like, what the fuck, see? That's fucking shitty. If I'm going to be evil about something, it will be very obvious. Like when I say Warren is an ugly dude. Hashtag shout out Bart of Darkness. Eat a bag of raw meat. Also, when are we going to see the Joker together? I was just kidding about that. I'm just kidding. Let's go see the Joker. Hugs and kisses. But yeah, like it's, you see George's work and it's like, whoa, like the brown people look like brown people, you know, like freaking everybody is not kind of like, well, say that, like you said, Ed, like, oh, well, just color this dude brown and now he looks like a brown dude, you know? It's like,
I saw one thing of like, it was like Steve Rogers, Hank Pym as like all the same guy. It was like white blonde guy. Right. It was like everyone looks the same.
Right. Let's see. Let me jump back into this. So 1980s, we started, we got that really stellar new Teen Titans run with Marv Wolfman.
Yes, dude.
1984, they relaunched a new Teen Titans series, same creative team, Marv Wolfman, but
George ended up leaving around issue 6 to work on, you know, the 50th anniversary event, Crisis on Infinite Earths. Mm. And I believe that was with Marv Wolfman as well.
What exactly was Crisis on Infinite Earths?
It was...
For people who don't know.
It was DC's...
Clean up job.
Yeah, it was DC's attempt to clean up the continuity. And yeah. and in that sci-fi series, he made a really good point I'd never thought about was that story had such a big impact on DC's history that, you know, because of them, you start talking about DC Comics as... You know, crisis,
post-crisis.
And it's like, damn, the big two, I mean, they're churning out big events all the damn time, yeah. but they don't mean shit when yeah. you compare it and to like the benchmark that crisis.
Right.
Did,
they don't
right?
serve a function other than trying to get money.
And this
Whereas
wasn't.
This was like, okay, DC Comics has, everybody kind of tends to forget that DC Comics has 30 years plus over yeah. Marvel, right? So they've been yeah. around a lot longer, which means there's a lot more comic book history, which mm-hmm. means there's a lot of weird continuity that exists mm-hmm. that may or may not have fit in with what they were doing in the 70s and 80s. So yeah. how do you rectify all those stories?
And it wasn't written to be an event.
Right.
It wasn't, you know, marketed as an event. It was right. just basically was like, look, housekeeping.
Right. We got to do an issue where basically, and I think the, not the gimmick, but like the main high point of the book was basically telling comic book readers like, hey, every single DC character is in this story.
That's like, why he wanted to draw it.
They're all like, oh, that's what I was going to yeah, say. Like, yeah, yeah. oh, that's like freaking every action figure yeah. in the toy box, and George gets yeah. first dibs, you know? Like, he had people like Dick Giordano, Jerry Ordway inking over him.
Oh, yeah, that's like dynamite.
What?
Yep.
Like, are you kidding me right now?
Yeah.
I kind of want to sit on this crisis for a minute because he even, in a, not only in that storyteller book, but in all the interviews I've seen him talk about this, he talks about like, I stepped up because it was a challenge mm-hmm. and I would get the script and I would ask, hey, can I add some more characters? Like he wanted to yeah. take this on to I mean, draw every single character.
Think about the events that happened in Crisis on Infinite Earths that still resonate today. The idea that Barry Allen, is he the character that's been dead in comics the longest before they decided to bring him back? It was like a good 25 yeah, yeah. years before
yeah, yes.
they
Bucky,
brought, yeah, they brought
him. Well, yeah, it got me there.
Well, what? Time length wise, was it the same amount?
I don't know. They've both been dead.
It
a
might
lot
have been.
Longer.
It yeah. might. Yeah, Bucky might yeah. be the only other
Uncle
one.
Ben. Yeah,
yeah.
He's still dead.
he is a damn hero. But the idea that you get death of Barry Allen, death of Supergirl.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those are some iconic covers.
Yeah.
Yo, yes.
I think every single issue yep. of oh, yeah. Crisis on Infinite Earth is just like. Either you've seen posters of them at Walmart, mm-hmm. you've seen like...
Oh, yeah, they're like
come on, man.
Issue number, mic drop. Exactly. Issue yeah. number, mic drop. Issue number, mic
and
drop.
That collab, him and Alex Ross did
yep.
for that special edition.
Woo.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Damn, beautiful. I forgot, but that was like a wraparound box,
wraparound
right?
with the two different Supermen, with the two different Supermen.
And I think it's safe yep. to say that one does have pretty much every single character.
Yeah, and
character.
It was George's pencils and then Alex Ross painted
it's
over
crazy.
It.
Crazy.
So, man, it's beautiful.
Yeah, like... Yeah, I didn't know how long we were going to spend.
No. I'm glad you stopped me.
Something
I'm
that's,
glad you did.
It's definitely a landmark within not just, you know, mainstream comics, but I think comics in general.
Yeah.
Because it kind of like solidifies our, because you got to remember, we're not the only country that's making comic books. Mm-hmm. You know, there's, I mean, for, I'd say France is probably on the upper echelon of comics being made.
Yeah.
And I would say underneath them is, but not very like, underneath them, I'd say is Japan. Mm. And I think we're almost about equal with them as far as where we stand.
But yeah.
I think as far as completely worldwide, this was a comic book series that had to have like gone everywhere. Like it's mm-hmm. like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Everybody's in this? Like
yeah.
Batman, Superman, but not just them, like other Batman yeah. and other Supermen.
Obscure characters.
Right.
Like Metal Men.
Lex Luthor's a good guy in one yeah. universe. Like what is
that
happening
me, like,
right now? Like
yeah.
this is like
I remember reading this series for the first time and like being blown away. Like that was safe to say I could point to that moment as my introduction into liking DC. Yeah. Like, that series was amazing, dude.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, oh it's God. Like, without making, like, a weird religious parallel, but, like, the way that some people view, you know, history like BC and AD, right? Where, like, you have, like, before Christ and then Anno Domini, the year yeah. of our Lord. Well, like, that's kind of like a weird thing with comic book heads where, like, they have unless you're, you know, if you're a DC fan, you know when somebody says, oh, pre-crisis, post-crisis, you know, like it's like, well, what does that mean? Like, and that's like, oh, you don't fuck with DC. Yeah. You don't fuck with DC. But like, it's that's how important his work is to continuity and to comics, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's saying something.
We can stop right here. That's episode. But here's the thing. There's still like,
you're right. We've got to go into the Marvel shit.
Several so let's more years to go through. Like, we're only at what, 1984, and we're talking about. So he's only been in the game, you know, about 10 years. And I think it's safe to say between his early Avengers work, Justice League work, Teen Titans, I think at this point, you could probably make a case that he's probably drawn every single person.
Yeah.
Like, every, as far as the big two goes.
Damn.
That was really good.
And created some people too. All along the way, found time to make characters.
Yeah. And then we got those cool Who's Who.
Right.
So, and that's the best part is like, not only did he change the game, but he also helped like draw the images to like make sense of
it all. He's one of the guys I think really, like you can say like Buscema and Romita in the 70s. He's like the 80s. He's kind of like set the standard of what superheroes should look like or should be drawn like.
Nope.
So yeah, it's
that's good. So that was 1984 was the Crisis on Infinite Earths. 1987, he joined Greg Plotter, on the rebooted Wonder Woman series, not only as a penciler, but as a plotter as well. He ended up working with Greg and Len Wein, on the stories, until eventually he took over the full writing, duties. He would work on the title for 5 years. He left at issue number 24. As far as penciling wise, but stayed on as a writer up to issue number 62, all the way into the 1992. Between 1988 to about 1992, he was co-plotter and penciler on New Teen Titans, working on Superman Action Comics, still working on Wonder Woman. But around this time, he was also like starting to work with Marvel because they wanted to get him on board for Infinity Gauntlet. But he was still on Wonder Woman duties. He actually ended up. That's why he only drew up to issue 4 of Infinity Gauntlet.
He was having issues with DC
editorial
editorial issues. Was the Infinity Gauntlet before? That was before Busiek run, right? Kurt Busiek.
Yeah. Okay. Well, before that. So while he was writing Wonder Woman, he felt that editorial, and that was a big reason why he left DC at this point to go back to Marvel, was that he felt that DC wasn't emphasizing, or doing anything to celebrate Wonder Woman's 50th anniversary. Yeah. They also weren't making the comic book, or at least this run of that, his run on Wonder Woman called War of the Gods. Mm-hmm. They weren't making it available in newsstand editions. Just comic book shops, right?
Which is a big deal back then.
And they ended up hiring a new writer to write like the pinnacle wedding issue of this
William
run.
William Messner-Lopes.
So, I mean, those kind of three things combined, he said, you know what, fuck this, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
So Wonder Woman, that Wonder Woman run has always been on my list of like things to visit.
Have you seen it? You're talking about War of the Gods?
I've always seen those images. Like, I think that's some of it.
Dude.
Man,
dude,
well drawn.
You're not ready. Man, I wasn't ready.
I think it was because of his run that they changed Wonder Woman's origin from like Paradise Island to Themyscira. Yeah. They also really emphasized like the mythology portion of it.
That for sure. Yep. Yeah. Straight like
he's the first one to give her like a sword and shield.
Thank
you
so much. Yep. So I mean, it's like, damn,
it's so Greek that your fingers smell like baklava when you're done, like done turning the page. Yeah.
Damn. Baklava.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you this. Pretty much everything this man has.
You'll have phyllo dough in your hair by the time you're finished.
I think one of the editors I was reading said that I can't believe it's like a straight male wrote this series.
Right, because he mentioned that like all of the women in the office were like, yeah, we don't, you know, it's like the Wonder Woman is like, no, that's not.
Well,
a
she was
good
kind of like almost like a sex symbol. They kind of made her into like more of like a sex symbol than a strong.
And that's one thing
character.
He wanted to redo about her too.
Yeah.
I want to real quick. I want to oversight this Infinity Gauntlet because those first four issues.
Yeah,
I remember being mad about Ron Lim jumping on.
Man, come on, give poor Ron.
I know. But
those are big shoes.
That issue one of Infinity Gauntlet from the cover. I mean, that cover is something else.
Oh, it's like
on
God, like fucking. And Mephisto's like licking his ear. You can see it. Like,
and something about like how dark, like how real kind of shady, and the way it's inked. It's like, damn, there's some gravitas to this. But that issue one has some of my favorite like Thanos images ever. I mean, there's the image where he's like a few images where he's like altering reality, you know, and the way that George kills it, man.
Yeah.
The Mephisto scenes. I mean, he drew the damn, you know, the snap scene, I believe.
Yeah.
He also drew him on the chair.
Yep.
Come on.
Smiling. With the little shines in his eyes, you know, like just black.
Just
nothing
like
there,
dude. So,
yeah. And you do the one where he's just standing in space, like,
yes.
Standing
come
in space.
Come get me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just kind of fast forward. So between around 92, 93, he left DC, did Infinity Gauntlet up to issue 4. He started collaborating with Peter David on Marvel's Epic Comics imprint. It was a series. It was a kind of a play on.
Oh, you
sex
mean
and
Peter
violence.
David that we all met?
Mm, what a guy!
Yeah,
sex and violence.
So a play on, you know, sex and violence. But he also around this time is when he worked with Peter David on Hulk Future Imperfect.
Oh, love it.
You wouldn't have Old Man Logan without it.
No,
I will go. I'm going to tell you right now.
No, you are.
I'm going to tell you right now.
When we interviewed Peter David, I asked him about that throne room because he attributed that trophy room,
yeah,
like in Future Imperfect, and then Red Skull has a similar thing.
Oh yeah,
Old Man Logan.
Yeah,
and I asked him. He's like, I never read that shit.
Awesome.
It's like,
America.
I've heard of that guy.
Yeah, fuck you, Mark Miller. Trying to tell us how to live our lives. We're American, damn it.
Damn right. Anyways, George just finds the opportunity to go above and beyond. I think that's kind of how I would put him is. Because I feel if he's imperfect, he probably didn't have to draw all those details in that throne room, but
No. It's
like George, like, nah.
Well, he's only had like two main characters to draw, so he's like, I got to draw something. I'm bored.
So that was kind of the big big moment in career time.
You could stare at that image.
Oh, it's awesome.
Look at that.
And you think about what did he do to this guy? You know?
Right. Yeah. It's freaking Peter Parker's outfit.
Yeah.
Fucking Captain America schmeckle somewhere over there.
Maestro is still like one of the most badass villains.
Dude, that hairline. Awesome.
Like he's got Hulk Hogan, the skullet. He's rocking the skullet.
Let me tell you something.
Hulk the Maestro, brother.
Hulk had that one piece jumpsuit. Brown, like, looking jumpsuit. In I
was like, what? He was wearing a romper.
Yes!
A romper. He's the male romper.
When he had to take a shit, he had to take the whole thing.
You're the most powerful. Yeah.
He's like, Hulk angry.
That's why he's
Hulk's
mad.
Hulk's shit and romper.
Yeah. Like, that's what makes him so upset. Dude. Yeah. Maestro didn't give a shit.
Mm. Maestro's awesome.
Mm.
So, what a great character.
Yeah.
So, like I say, he was bouncing around Marvel doing work like that. In 94, he was working with Malibu Comics. He did the first 6 issues of Ultra Force.
Oh, Malibu.
I did not know he drew
God,
Ultra Force.
Malibu. Oh, I remember my cousins from New York always saying shit like, it's like, yo, you went to Malibu?
Stop.
Yo, you got to get into Malibu.
I've never heard anybody say
I've
that.
And I was just kind of like, why? Fuck? It was such a gimmick, dude.
Ultraman? Yeah.
Oh, dude, such a gimmick.
Marvel bought him in like...
Wasn't Nightman part
Nightman.
Of Malibu?
Yes.
Rune?
Rune!
I think dad has all of these comics in his box.
Marvel bought him and just threw him
dude,
in
dude, then
the
my...
Safe.
Rune!
Dude, yes.
Never to be seen again.
Then my uncle...
Shadow
this
Man.
Is a fucking... Some real
come on,
Puerto
man.
Rican nonsense for real. So my uncle was like trying to like pimp out his like son. Like my cousin was like, yeah, you see, I know you into comics. Because, you know, he had like a lisp. He's like, yeah, I see you into comics. Just like, you know, just like Joseph here. He's very into all those Marvel characters you like. All those artists and
don't
the people from DC.
Me.
They like totally went and they started this new thing. And, you know, Seth, I can't believe you don't know about this. Oh, Jonathan, he knows everything about comics. I'm saying like, fuck you, Jonathan. You know shit about comics. I'm going to tell you right now, this shit's going to collapse in a year. Don't even talk to me about fucking Malibu. Ah, but that's the way it is right there. See, look, I'm proud of my son. Look at him. He's better. And he's looking at my dad. Hey, Pedro, does your son know about this? Did your son know about Malibu Comics? And my dad's looking at me like, son, did you know about, please tell me you knew about.
Is your Uncle Luis Guzman?
We can't let, his name is Uncle Louie for real.
Luis Guzman? Okay. Yes. Character actor Luis Guzman?
Yes. Yes.
Malibu. Didn't Malibu Comics have like M as their?
Yes. It made me feel like a complete piece of shit for not reading
M
Malibu.
With like palm trees around.
Get
or
the
something.
Fuck out.
Yes.
Terrible.
Yes.
Were they based
was it
out of
Prime?
Florida?
Wasn't it Prime?
Yes.
Was one of their
Prime.
Characters?
Yeah, Prime.
Prime.
Mm. Prime.
And then they did like
dude
the
on steroids, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, get out
with
sure.
a Borat like swimsuit.
We are ripping the shit out of Malibu.
But and then, look, we say all that, then it gets real quiet. We're like, yo, but George Perez's work is fucking
yeah. But I didn't know he did the work. So when I was researching, I was like, oh, damn, I might read
he doesn't mention it, I'm just... sure. It's not. Let's see. Teen Titans, Wonder
Wait,
Woman.
Wasn't there a
Crisis?
Cartoon series?
Spoiler, oh, yeah. George really Perez is my uncle, guys.
Since the 90s.
So that was 94 was Malibu Comics rise. In 96, he returned to DC Comics. There's another Teen Titans series that had launched. This time is written in pencil by Dan Jurgens, and George's did the inking. 1997, George Perez has his one creator-owned comic. It's called Crimson Plague. It was a science fiction story about an alien of ultra-toxic blood.
One issue.
Yeah, one issue. And then later republished by Guerrilla Comics in 2000 with bonus content. Apparently, this was like straight financed by George.
And, yeah, he's losing money.
Yeah, he said he was getting into debt.
And he was hiring because he's based the characters on some models.
Okay.
And so he was losing money toting their asses around the conventions.
Really?
To dress.
Oh, man.
Bikini. Damn, that's wild.
So, yeah, he said he was lost like $5,000 an issue doing it or something.
Jesus.
Crazy. Yeah, but in 97 is when he returned to doing major ongoing series, and this time was with Kurt Busiek on the third series of The Avengers, which to me is still like my all-time favorite.
It's music,
Avengers
baby.
Series, dude.
Music. It's music.
And that's the other thing about George. I don't know if he picks or he just falls in line, but
all these writers, dude, they're like, oh, fuck, please, dude, will you help me? Just please, will you fucking
can tell him to draw all this stuff and he won't get mad?
It's like, please do fucking do my project, man. I'll do whatever you fucking want. Just
Marv
let me.
Wolfman.
Like Jim Shooter was like, Kurt. Please let me fucking I need to do the quarterback saga, man. I don't know what the fuck to do with this guy, man. What am I fucking doing with this guy, man?
That was like the scariest Ultron.
Dude, right?
Yes.
Yeah. They actually said
he's a serious villain.
I think that was like only a two or three.
Wasn't there an issue where he like bit off a dude's dick?
Oh Jesus.
To Ed's point, there's a three-part Ultron story in this Avengers series that definitely inspired the Avengers Ultron movie. It's just a lot better. Dude, I'm telling you, this Avengers run is phenomenal. Like, I remember going to Suncoast, buying each one by issue, and I was missing a bunch, and like it was on my.
Your dad's took those. He was I don't know where those comics were, boy.
They're so well drawn. Definitely check that series out. I highly recommend it. I know they're collected somewhere. So I'm going to jump from 97 to 2003, because that's when he once again teamed up with Kurt Busiek for this JLA Avengers series.
Oh, everybody.
Which once again had everyone. I mean, I think this series, it was only, four issues, I believe? Four issues, but garnered so much praise and attention. Because, I mean, you know, just it was Marvel and DC agreeing to finally do this story arc. Because they wanted to do this in the 1980s, but of course all the red tape, all the legality stuff, it just fell through. And George actually drew about 24 pages in the 1980s for this original series, had to scrap it. Come back 2003, we got that, you know, that infamous four-issue run. That saw the Avengers and JLA fighting each other, and it was like a who's who, man. Mm-hmm. Like even I think I shared like a cover yesterday on our Instagram, and it was like, yo, who's not on this? You know, I feel like you're a Z-list character when you're not drawn. If George Perez doesn't add you, it's
he
like
doesn't want to draw you.
Yeah, you're a piece of shit.
Nah,
yo, where y'all going? You didn't know we're on the cover. I'll be there. I'll be there. So that was 2003, and then from there up to 2019, it was kind of like scarce work. I think he started just doing a lot more conventions, commissions, etc. But in 2011, he did do cover art and breakdowns for the new DC, I think, Rebirth Superman series. In 2014, he wrote and drew a 6 issues of his own creation called Sirens that was published by Boom Studios. And then I've got 2019 is when he announced his retirement. Of course, it was just due to a plethora, sadly, of health issues. I mean, diabetes, heart ailments, vision issues. But even in his announcement that he was retiring from creating new comics, you know, he was still, you know, I'm still going to go to conventions this year. I'll still do sketches, but I just don't have it in me to do ongoing series, which.
Yeah. And all the sketches he was doing, he was donating it too. So it was like,
exactly. Once again, that Heroes Initiative, he still had that on his mind, but it's kind of like at this point, like what else, man? Like what else do we expect you to do?
So here you go, guys. This has 1,000 characters on it. How the fuck?
I know.
It's an index card.
He could have stopped in 88 and he would have been
right?
Legend.
Right. I mean, what? DC, Marvel. Boom.
Gorilla.
Malibu.
Also Malibu. Don't forget about the Malibu bot. You got to understand.
He worked for like Image. I think that Crimson thing was an Image title originally. Mm-hmm. Cross-gen. I mean, I think he did some stuff for Top Spots.
What about his magazine? Pace Setter.
Wait, are you joking?
I'm not kidding. He has George Perez magazine.
I did not know this. I don't know why. Tell me more. Uh-huh. What is
oh, my God.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. He had his own kind of magazine, like artist, like what we're doing now, kind of like artist spotlight type stuff.
What? That's dope. Is it really called Pacesetter?
Yes.
What the fuck? That's why I thought you were joking, because you said, you know, the Pacesetter thing. What?
Pacemaker.
Huh. Look, while you're looking that up, I do want to say that, unfortunately, I was looking at his convention schedule, and his last one, I don't think he's doing any more after this year, but his last one this year was Dragon Con, which was, what, 2 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the one before that was Fetish Con.
Oh, I missed it.
I think he said he's going to keep doing those two, right?
Fetish Cons?
Just the one Fetish Con and Dragon Con.
Oh, wow.
Oh, nice.
That's cool.
That's really cool. Anyway, that one's
number 15.
15. So, I mean, you know, he probably did it for a while. That's really dope. Huh.
Yeah.
Learn something new. Cool. So that's pretty much it as far as like the quick career recap. I know that was a lot of information, but I mean, considering the subject, we could have definitely gone a little more deeper.
I was going to say, can you guys explore a little bit about his style? Like what makes his style so unique compared to other artists, right? Like, can you guys think of anything?
I don't know if unique.
I know where you're going with this, Ed, and I kind of want to bring this up too.
Yeah, because I don't know if he was just such a good draftsman. It's kind of like growing up, if you grew up during that time, this is like what comics are supposed to look like. He's, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? It wasn't, to me, the guys that, even though I really liked his work, but I, you know, guys that I like, you know, Bill Sienkiewicz, the kind of guys that were kind of stranger
right.
stylistically from the norm, but he kind of set the look of a decade plus of superheroes. So it's, and just outside of his, you know, he's just so technically proficient and consistent, and, you know, just his paneling is, you know, unparalleled. And something that I've heard him mention is like, he drew Wonder Woman with curly hair and everyone else always drew her with straight hair.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He draws hair really well. I know that's a weird thing to focus on, because drawing hair is like basically finding the good spots for highlights.
Jericho is a Jewish character and he has a Jufro, literally. Yeah.
And just the fact that he drew, like we mentioned earlier, he drew like, you know, ethnic characters.
Yes.
And one of his things that a lot of artists have trouble with is he could draw the same character and they don't have to be in the same costume for you to recognize them.
Right.
And they could change their hairstyle. They could wear casual. They could wear, like, look at the Teen Titans.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they could, but they're drawn so well that you can tell, oh, that's, you know, so-and-so. They don't look all the same. Yeah. Even though there's some criticism about him having, you know, similar facial expressions, but like his ethnicity, the drawing ethnicities, just his draftsmanship, his paneling, it's, you know, it's up there.
So for everybody listening, full disclosure, when Botter and I were kind of talking about Artist Spotlight and George Perez's name being thrown in the mix, I'm with Ed, and that the artists that freaking slapped me in the face with their freaking dick, all are weird.
Yeah.
Like their styles are just crazy. Like Mike Mignola's hard shadows, and before him, Jack Kirby with the same sort of thick lines, his line work being like Titanic in nature in that regard. And like Bill Sienkiewicz with his abstract sort of weird spray sort of painted with splashes everywhere. Mm-hmm. Even Todd McFarlane with almost sort of like a John Byrne on steroids with cartooniness added to it. Yeah. Like it's all there. And it was like, man, what about George? Like, how has he done all this work and not really been on my radar as of late? And the idea is that I think a lot of people take George Perez for granted.
Yeah.
I think a lot of comic book fans really do take George. Like, there's a reason why it's not just because, well, he's a company man, see? Like the dude knows how to... What is it? Like when Bruce Lee is on the boat, Enter the Dragon, when the guy's like, what's your style? And Bruce looks at him and he goes, my style? My style is the art of fighting without fighting. You know? And it's true. Like George Perez is like, he's that dude. Like he's like, my style is the art of fighting without fighting.
Yeah,
you know? Like he could look and draw, like look at somebody and say, that's what they should look like, blah, blah, blah. Like little stuff that you just take for granted. Like, goddamn. Yeah, he did draw Wonder Woman with curly hair. Sure as shit did. You know? Like, like, oh, look at that. Like, he did this and this and this. And it's like, the more you break it down, the more you see, like he, I don't know, like, I don't want to feel like I have to sell him, because you really just need to look at his work. If you haven't, look at it. It's worth a look.
Yeah, and there's an interview I read that when Wolfman and him were doing the Teen Titans run, and they were getting a lot of fan mail, but he was saying, it's like, well, does anyone say anything about my art?
Hmm.
And Wolfman's like, look, it's like, this has become kind of bigger than us individually. He's like, we're trying to tell a good story with kids that people can relate to. And that's, I think, the appeal of that Teen Titans run is, you know, a lot of people that draw a younger character, especially if you're an older person, you get really stereotypes. But I think with Teen Titans, it has a timeless thing. And I think with his style being just...
Yeah.
It's like a timeless style because, you know, you look at, like, to me, as much as I like McFarlane, I think 90s. Leafield, I think 90s. Jim Lee, I think 90s.
Correct.
Even though, well, two of those three has evolved their art style over the years. But you look at that, I look at a Jim Lee thing, I'm thinking, oh, I'm back at like 1995. But
he taught a lot of artists how to do things without really know. That just goes right back to who he is.
And his
George Perez taught people how to draw a cover.
Yeah.
Like you think about, like, this dude knew how to craft a cover.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at Teen Titans number one.
I mean, he was doing like wraparound covers in the
80s. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, dude was out there changing the game so subtly and so long throughout time that you basically didn't see
it. And he wasn't a bombastic personality either. So he didn't have that aspect.
No, yeah, you know, he wasn't stuck on himself. Yep. Like, he's just like, ooh, what can I do with this? Like, very slowly, very gradually doing things that were so iconic that when other artists immediately saw it and started doing it, maybe they got the credit for it.
Yeah.
When in reality, this dude was doing it on covers before anyone else was. He was drawing people like this before anybody else was. Like, it's... It's quietly like the heartbeat of comic books.
You could, damn, well said. You hit the nail on the head, man. Ashley, like, what is it about his artwork for you that kind of resonates?
I think, like, saying the heartbeat of it, it's perfect. It's amazing. Because when I think of his artwork, for some reason, the first thing that comes into my mind is Starfire.
Oh, I love that.
And
design.
She's got like that
big hair,
big old feathered hair,
yeah,
and big lips, and her lashes are dark.
Huh.
Yeah. And it's not anything crazy, but it's, you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
It's just like this feeling that he put into everything.
And that Cyborg design is, both those designs have pretty much not changed that much.
Yeah, it's
years.
Like, it is. It's like a timeless thing that he's done. Like, how do you say it's a style when it doesn't go in and out of style?
Yeah.
Like, it's always going to be.
I would say he is one of the most brilliant comic book engineers I have ever seen. Like the way an engineer would look at a jet and like say how, like, he's like Howard Hughes for comics in the sense that he could look at something and be like, oh, those are the rules. Cool. Let me play with it. He's not going to just try and be like, well, let me just stylistically do this. Look, I made the eyes bigger on Spider-Man's mask. You know, don't get me wrong. That's cool. Yeah. But for him to be like, I changed the dynamic of the cover so that way Spider-Man could pose like this and it looks more interesting when you see it. The fact that he could, in his career, halfway through it, that he could end it halfway through his career is saying something. And the fact that he could just look at somebody, any artist now, regardless of where they're at, and they're the most, let's say they're the most hotshot artist the big two have to offer, he could just pull out freaking Crisis on Infinite Earth number 6 and be like, that's how you do it, kid.
Ooh. I think George deserves to be, if there is a Mount Rushmore of comic books, I think he deserves a spot on there.
And he'd be smiling.
Yeah, exactly. Yo.
He'd be smiling.
And another aspect for me, outside of just the artwork and the design, is his story, man. Like, it's a very, like, you almost have to, for me, I put him in the same category as, like, your Jack Kirby and your Stan Lee's. Like, their stories of rising, of chasing this American dream and rising to prominence and putting, like, comic books on the map. Reading his, especially reading that storyteller, man, like, he did it. Like, this, and it just so happens that he happened to be a minority. Like, this brown kid loved comic books enough to just pursue it. Like, pursue it with this raging passion that nothing was going to stop him.
Yep.
And it's like, damn.
In an industry where he wasn't represented.
Yeah.
Dale, mi gente, otra vez. Otra vez, Jorge.
Like, not only not represented, but came in and said, okay, I'll learn the house styles, but I'm going to add my own, like, flair and flavor to it. Like,
come on. Serio?
Come on. What about his retirement? Does his retirement do anything to, like, the way you view his legacy or his impact?
Shit, because he's earned it, man.
Yeah, that's happy for him.
Like, I'll make him some rice and beans
right
now.
Can you name anyone else that has had a happy I mean, it's unfortunate the health reasons are why. And I bet you if he could still draw, you know,
because sure hands, would still
he still drawing it. But
yeah.
Does that retirement do anything else to his legacy when you think about it? Because I got to say, like,
no.
Like I said, he could have stopped in 89 and
right.
That's a career. So thanks.
There's
no.
There's no doubt that this man loves comic books and represents it. Like that representation too is very key. Like mm-hmm. like we all said, we go to a convention, he's there. It's like, oh,
he's so New York.
Come
man.
On.
Like yeah. he's so New York. Like all of that. He lives and breathes it. Like he's like, oh yeah, the culture and blah blah blah. And like he's wearing that fuck that damn shirt.
He's
man.
A character himself.
Like a lot of New Yorkers, he retired in Florida.
Yes, dude. He's like tired of the cold. The one thing that he's missing that all these artists kind of have is that they have yeah. that marketability.
The self-promotion.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Like Todd McFarlane, Jim Lee, Eric Larson, you could characterize all those dudes as like yeah. the bad boys of comics, right? And I've heard yeah, that yeah, before. Yeah. Even now, they still use it to like describe people like Lionel Yu, like, oh, he's a bad boy. You know, like how many no, seriously, guys. Yeah, you guys all we all came up in the 90s. How many times have you heard the bad boy of comics regarding countless artists?
It's like a fucking oxymoron.
Right, but you never hear the nice guy of comics. Hmm. You never hear it. Why? Because you can't sell that shit.
Yeah.
You can't be like, oh, he's edgy. George Perez, and that might be the reason why a lot of people aren't hip to his like to hip to his style or his work is that he is like, it's like, oh, how are you gonna? Is he the bad boy of comics? Nah, he's the nice guy that came to work on time of comics. You know, it's like, well, shit. Like, I mean. It's like, but in reality, who do you want penciling your book?
Yeah.
The dude who's consistent, the dude who can fucking deliver every goddamn time, or the fucking flake who's like, my art style's like, you know, I need a couple more months to really just nail this one panel down because I've been thinking, what if Spider-Man's penis could like show a little bit through
Marvel
the
Black?
I think yeah. it should be like that, right? Yeah. And you know, the writer and the, you know, the producers are all like, fuck, God, can we just fucking get it? Meanwhile, George is like, all right, I'll get this book out on time. No problem. You want a million characters? Gotcha.
He has, like I said, very blue-collar approach
right.
to it.
Excuse me while I go home and kiss my wife, you know? Like,
actually, as far as like from a design perspective, what would be like a few things that you feel like maybe in an art school setting that they would emphasize for George?
I would say the consistency, definitely the detail. I know I've watched videos like the tutorials of him drawing and things like that. And I don't know. He's just very like he does. He treats it like a job. Hmm. Like when you watch his videos, he's very friendly and he's just focused and he just works through the panel and he just delivers every single time.
Let's draw a superhero comparison here, right? Like it's like, well, who do you like more, Batman or Superman? You know, and it's like people are like, oh, fucking love Batman. Oh, Batman.
Wow.
Yeah, he's not like Superman. Superman's a fucking lame ass Boy Scout character, blah blah. But if a space shuttle was crashing, who would you want? Be honest, and you were on it. And you were on the space shuttle. It's going to crash. Who would you want to save you? Who would you most, without even thinking, like, you're going to pick the fucking dude with no powers, but he's got a gadget, and somehow he'll save you, and maybe it'll be fucking hard and bumpy on the way down. You're like, oh, shit! And you're like, you, like, shat your pants, and then Bat's like, I saved your ass.
You call me a punk all the time?
Right, right. And then he leaves. You know, like, would you want the bad boy of comics to fucking save your life, or would you want to depend on fucking the nice guy who wears the blue, the bright outfit, just like George Perez does, and fucking nails it every single fucking time. Mm. He's Superman.
Mm. Preach. All right, I got one more question for you guys, and then we'll go on break. But is there a singular image or even a comic series that for you guys encapsulates George Perez and his artwork and his legacy that, you know, you would recommend or just you kind of hold dear? Because for me, I think it is that JLA and Avengers run. That image of Superman holding like Thor's hammer, Cap shield, like to me that to your point, like yo, I felt like I was looking at just the best work that he had to offer. Like yo, his love of comic books and especially like the big two and capes, it's like it's in that series, dude. Like I think he even says like he went all in. He put his all into it, and that's a big reason why his hands, I forget what the name of what the health issue that he has, particularly with his hands, but that was a big contributor why his hands ended up just kind of fucking up, was that that series just took so much out of him. But dude, you can just feel it, man. You read that and you're like, damn, like he put in his all. Like he was out here trying to represent for superheroes, the big twos and the capes, all into this one series.
Dude, so, you pick up any of his comics that he's drawn, it's almost kind of, as soon as you said that, that hit me just now in the chest, dude, that you could pick up an old tattered issue of Crisis or an old tattered issue of like Infinity Gauntlet, or even, damn it, even a damn Malibu comic, right? You have it in your hand and you realize like you're holding his energy. Mm. Like you're holding the fucking shit he put his health in. Like he literally threw his life into his work and you can hold it. Like you can pick up another man's life force, his damn energy. And just like read it and be like, man, he did it for me. Mm. Like I could read this and be like, oh shit. Like, yeah, I mean, of course he did it for a paycheck, obviously. But at the same time, he's doing what he loved.
Good.
Clearly.
What about you, Sue?
It's going to be Barry running as fast as he fucking can into the Speed Force in Crisis. That's going to be, that shit is one of the earliest like George, like fucking panels I ever saw. In comics, period, like even when I was little, I just didn't know who I was looking at. Hmm. And I was like, oh my God, like he ran so fast, he died. Is that for real? Fuck that shit. I'm never going to be into sports. Yeah. You know, and thus a little fat Puerto Rican boy who loved things that his father thought were gay.
When you sent me the initial draft of that intro, I was like, yo.
I still hate myself.
I was thinking like, yo, if there was any way to do an audio intro of, you know, his artwork, that moment has got to be it,
right?
Like, come on. So kudos, that was a good choice. What about you, Ashley? What was that image or comic series for you?
It was the I'd say that Wonder Woman reboot, that 1987 with because Len Wein is amazing, and then the two of them together, and that story was just so good.
The War of the Gods.
Yeah,
I didn't know it was like 20 plus parts. I was like, damn.
Yeah, they have it in a big omnibus.
Okay. So you can get it for like together. $5 at Books a Million.
Oh, that's cool.
It's like one of the ones that are on rotation.
And that's
for like
the one. Yeah. And that's nice. The one with the cover where like the most iconic cover of his with Wonder Woman, like where she's kind of like slapping the bands together, and it's like all of this like mosaic. It's,
right.
Yeah. That's cool. It's the art is amazing. The story is. Huh. I don't even know how to. Well, you kind of described the story, but it's just incredible.
Damn. Baklava on your fingers.
That's cool. All right. What about you, Ed?
Oh, man. I guess series, I'd probably say the Judas Contract.
Oh, shit. Statutory rape.
And damn,
that's kind of gets kind of creepy.
We didn't even talk about him creating Deathstroke or Nightwing or.
The sweet orange pirate boots.
Damn. It is. They are sweet.
And I just like the. Yeah, that underage noodling aside, just the team itself, it's I really like, because you have just the variety of characters, and the storylines can go anywhere, just because, you know, you have, you know, gothic horror with Raven, you have space
shit,
science fiction with Starfire, you have just kind of like your street level hero with Robin. It's just the potential of stories that you can go with this group just because of the diversity of the characters. And I just still love that Cyborg design and Starfire design. Those are probably my favorite. And as far as like one of my favorite panels is that trophy room, is Maestro's trophy room. That was just such I was like, holy shit, this dude did some. Oh no.
You know, the editor was like, okay. All right. Well, all right, George. Okay. Hey, take a break, man.
Yeah. I just wanted a simple. Yeah.
You get it like a week off. Like, you know that, right?
No, you let us know. Just the fact that he has it around just so he can just walk in just on a Sunday, just like, yeah. Fucked him up. fucked this guy up. Ripped this dude's head off.
Look at that guy. He shit his pants before I took his outfit.
Spider-Man totally shit his pants.
Look at that, huh?
And I ate him.
Little shit stain.
All right. I think that that wraps us up as far as this spectacular spotlight on, man, one of the most influential.
A damn legend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well said. So We're going to go on break. I do want to go ahead and, you know, welcome any other, you know, recommendations. If you got a comment, a special memory about George Perez or any stories that's resonated with you and you're listening to this, man, let us know, man. I would love to hear how this artist has impacted your life as well. Shoot us an email at theshortboxjacks@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail, 904-580-4095. We're going to go on break. I'm going to play a special track, man. This one is in tribute, to a stellar friend of the show and just integral part of the Jacksonville and just hip-hop community, Peyton Locke. All right, this is a Peyton Locke tribute by Willie Evans Jr., Jay Wunda, Dylon, Basic, and Jay Maestro. It's available on Bandcamp, a digital track for a dollar, and all the proceeds goes towards the Peyton Locke Foundation set up to take care of his family in his passing. All right, we miss you. We miss you, Peyton. So we're going to play this track, come back, do champions, and wrap up, right?
Hey, look, see, my playbook the same, stepping in with no hook peep. I'm still sitting on the grass with Chubb Master V, ASAMO. Long way past the demo with Skits, though. Who does that shit, yo? Development team developing themselves, dark room, dream fluid. Memories cold clipped on a clothesline, coming into definition, reminiscing old times. Oh shit, new times, trying to teach two times the dumb brother sitting on Trafalgar lines. Damn. Did that shit, huh? Did not monkey with the funky one time. Double overdose, dope. Still trying to catch up, though. Ain't nobody iller than my man Boris O. What's even doper is advice from a brother when a father got two kids and ain't no other place that he can go.
Brother, you don't know.
One time.
What love is.
One time for my man Pay a Lot.
What love is.
One time for my man Boris O.
What love is.
One time for my man trying to cheat.
What love is.
Gotta put it up for P one time. Gotta put it up for P one time. Gotta put it up for P one time. Gotta put it up for P one time, boy.
You don't know.
I'm just gonna record a whole episode reading George Perez's like comic books on a show. Damn.
3 hours later.
Yo.
God.
3 years later.
All that research, I was like, I ain't doing enough, apparently. That's like his work.
Made you feel shitty about your own life?
I'm like, yo, maybe I should like do an extra push up or like two. I mean, damn. Oh, man. Yeah, we got one email to read today from Justin. So, see, I'll go ahead and let you do
cool.
that honor.
All right. This one's called Champion Season. What's up, Shortbox crew? Justin here, model influencer, fucking weeaboo, and all-around badass.
Whoa.
These are his words.
Okay.
Anyway, I want a Champion Season. My first ever promotion event, October 5th, is the third annual Waves event downtown at Justice Pub with artists like Kamai. It's an R with three I's after it. So I'm going to say Re-I. All right. Anyway, with artists like Kamai, that one I couldn't name, Tiana Jones, L-O-V-E Culture, and more. Shameless plug. If y'all want to come by and become wave riders. Ah, clever. Love you guys so much. And don't forget, I'm famous. P.S.
Huh?
Tell Drew he's fucking disgusting for eating only the chocolate cookies and not the white filling.
Yeah, that's
it's
weird.
It's the best of both worlds. Are we talking about Oreos?
Yeah.
Really? He does that?
Yeah. I think there was an episode
talked about it last week.
That's fucking weird.
Well, look, we're going to continue this.
Okay. Yeah. It's weird, isn't it? Yeah.
That's very bizarre.
Well, shout out to Justin, first of all.
Also, Justin, I don't know. That Wave Rider sounds very suggestive, young man.
Wave Rider.
Sounds very suggestive, but I wouldn't mind becoming one. I'll tell you
Look,
that.
Look, I think it was an episode with just me, Ashley, and Drew.
They were Game of Thrones Oreos.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. I brought Game of Thrones cookies, and the whole time that we're recording,
he's not eating the cream.
Dude, he's scraping the cream, and Ashley calls him out on the mic.
Because there was a ball of cream. It was so gross.
Isn't that gross?
Yeah. That shit was weird. That
what
shit
the
was,
fuck is wrong with that
yeah,
boy?
Right?
You ever like... Your friends ever, like, your long-term friends ever do some new shit? And you're like, what the? I would have ended this years ago.
Yo, you remember when, at the end of Get Out, when homegirl's dipping the Fruit Loops in the milk and then eating them? Like, she's just eating dry-ass Fruit Loops, dipping it into the milk,
the
and then
milk
putting it in her mouth?
The milk doesn't even stay on? What is...
Like, I was like, that is some fucking Get Out bullshit.
Oh, boy. Justin, thank you so much. And I want to say something real quick, because we met Justin for the first time at our
podcaster meetup.
And that reminds me that we are doing another podcaster meetup this month on September 25th. That's a Wednesday from 6 to 8. We're doing it at the Higher Pixels Studios. And that is all the emails we got. And I don't want to keep us too long, so let's go ahead and jump right into our champion season. That you are a champion in the era. Champion Season, for those of you tuning in for the first time, is our last segment of the show. It's our opportunity to go around the table and highlight a few things in pop culture that we feel, hey, this is really dope. So you could check out a book, a comic book, a movie, TV series, whatever it is, we feel, hey, it's worthy enough to get noted. Ashley, how about you going to kick us off? What are you going to champion today?
All right, so I just got one, so I'm going to set it up a little bit. So Friday night, I had a 10-hour day at work. I'd been up since 5:30 in the morning. I was so tired. It was like 10 o'clock at night. I laid on my couch. I wanted to watch a Netflix movie, and I put this movie on, and it was subtitled. I was like, I'm not going to make it through more than 15 minutes of this movie. I watched the whole 2-hour movie and I was so pumped. Like I couldn't fall asleep. It was, has anyone seen Train to Busan?
Oh, Train to Busan?
Yeah.
The zombie movie?
Great. It was. It's have a you really seen good
it? Yes. 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 We reviewed it on Straight Chillin'. It's fucking great.
It's a fun movie.
I loved it. Like I kept thinking like, as soon as that like first 5 minutes, since that zombie deer gets up, I was like, oh, this is going to be good. Yeah. I watched the whole thing. I didn't fall asleep. I read all the subtitles. Like that's how good movie. It was.
It is
like,
fun. Yeah.
And it's characters like, start, are cool too. Yeah. Start to finish. Just like action. And it's got like those, not like those Walking Dead, like sludging around. It's got like those rabid, like
28 days later,
chase
zombies.
You, like break their bones chasing you and not stop like horrifying zombies.
It's really
and it's
good.
Free on Netflix.
Yeah.
So, like, everybody should watch it. It was so good.
Damn, nice one. All right. See, what about you?
So, I'm going to champion the last podcast on the left's Mormonism.
Oh, God. I just
finished
that
one's great.
Part 4 is out. It's so fucking great. It had me so hype on how fucking nutty Mormonism is that I decided to start watching Battlestar Galactica again, which is basically
Battlefield Earth.
Mormons in space.
That's Scientology. My bad.
Yeah. It's awesome.
I listened to the Book of Mormon soundtrack.
I want to see it. I haven't seen the stage play. But anyway, last podcast on the left's Mormonism and Battlestar Galactica, the 2004 series.
Nice.
I was going to say October 20th, last podcast on the left's going to be in Orlando.
They are.
What?
We should have a field trip.
I would. What day you guys enjoy it. I have drill.
Damn. What day is that?
I don't
That's
know.
Probably a Saturday.
Oh.
More likely. I mean, if he's got drill, probably a weekend. Okay.
It might be during the week. Oh. Maybe like it might be on Friday or something like that. I don't know.
That's a Sunday, actually.
Oh, see, I'm fucked.
That's weird. Damn. Okay. Cool. What about you, Ed? What do you got to champion?
I'm going to champion. I've been kind of redoing all my books and stuff. So I'm going to champion this Richard Corbin art book. It's all his work from Eerie and Creepy from the 70s. And I'm just championing an artist that is the polar opposite of George Perez. if you're not familiar with him, you probably have seen his work. If you're a heavy metal fan, he's done countless covers. He's worked for pretty much everybody. He's done, he did a Luke Cage Max line early 2000s.
He did Ghost Rider for a little bit.
Ghost Rider. He's kind of dabbled into the mainstream stuff, but he typically does, you know, horror adaptations, Lovecraft, Poe. And, but his work is so unusual. It's like people are almost kind of made out of like dough or clay, like some of his rendering. It's this really bizarre art. It's like, it's maybe not a name you're familiar with, but
if R. Crumb was Alex Ross.
Yeah, that's pretty good. But it's a really nice hardcover Dark Horse put out 2012. All the work is scanned from the original art. And what's his name? Jose Villarrubia. He's done some, he did the foreword for it. And he did some color restoration for some of the older pieces. So that's really cool. He's a fantastic colorist. But like I said, he's got praise, like I said, from Jeff Darrow. He's basically saying if he was born in Japan, he'd be a national treasure.
Damn.
So it's a really cool work. If you haven't seen it, it's very bizarre. Like I said, great. One of the best horror comics or horror artists out there. So definitely if you can pick up this book, it's like $30. Not bad. But it's a really nice hardcover. Check it out.
Ed, did you have anything else?
Nope.
All right. I want to go to champion this barbecue spot off Atlantic. It's called ABBQ Meat and Drink.
Oh, I've heard of that place.
Really good. We went on Friday. Brisket was amazing.
Yes.
What was this?
I fucking love brisket.
Dude, when I tell you this.
Did they offer you how much? They ask you how much fat you wanted?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. That's legit.
You can either go straight ahead to where you can just buy the meat, you know, buy the half pound or pound, or you can go sit down and like buy like, you know, from the other side of the menu. But
I like that.
The brisket is amazing. And dude, it's even better like heated up, which I don't know if I've ever had any good leftover brisket like that. Yeah, we did not have like a bad thing on the menu. We got brisket, mac and cheese.
Is this the best place, you think?
Yeah, like it's up there. It's up there. I'll say that. And it looks really cool too, man.
On
like,
Instagram, so.
It looks updated, but the prices don't reflect that. It's still like, yo, this is still a barbecue spot, man. Like, come on.
Was it like hipster barbecue? Like, they give you your food in a mason jar?
And... no, it's like, yo, we put like this shit on a
cutting board.
Yeah,
but yeah, I definitely recommend that spot if you're in the mood for barbecue.
Just another food. Just thought popped in my head, but have you seen? We talked about this. Have you seen the Popeyes? Doing like bring your own bread.
Yeah, BYOB.
And order a three piece.
Bring your own bun.
Bring your own bun.
Yeah, yeah, BYOB.
Order a 3-piece. There's your sandwich.
That's awesome.
And they do.
That's awesome.
I'm telling you.
That's, and they made a video.
So here's the thing, man.
This is.
People are acting like.
People are drawing guns.
Even if the fucking. Yeah. Popeye's sandwich is better than Chick-fil-A's chicken sandwich. They don't got the service that Chick-fil-A does.
No.
You still go to Popeye's, they still treat you shitty.
Oh, those black ladies are so mean to me. They're so mean to me.
Look, and they
just the fat guy wants the chicken. So mean.
I just want the sandwich, man.
Like what?
You're like, could I also get pickles? The guy's like, like that.
Pickles.
Fine.
Maybe, bitch.
And you hear them, look, and they don't even mute the mics. They're like, this motherfucker wants pickles.
Yo. Pickles for a bitch.
So,
what else do you want, sir? They call you sir.
Yeah, I'm right here.
Like a sarcastic sir.
I guess just the sandwich. Mm-hmm. Then. Oh, you don't want the meal?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know it's cheaper with the meal.
Mm-hmm.
You know
not appreciate value?
Okay, fine.
Wait, Ashley, you're laughing.
Sandwich for a bitch.
Wait, Ashley, you're laughing. Like, have you experienced this
yet?
Just
wants a sandwich.
Cesar saying bitch.
That's it.
That's all it takes.
I didn't say it. No, I'm calling him sir. Please, sir. I'm not trying to get fired. So, sir, would you like anything else on your sandwich? You sure?
Oh, shit. So that's my first champion, ABBQ Meat and Drink off Atlantic. And then the last thing I'll champion is the new season of Hip Hop Evolution on Netflix.
Yo, you sent me that text so fast.
God, it was so
good. You sent me that text so fast. Yo,
like, it's only 4 episodes, which kind of pisses me off, I ain't gonna lie. But
Jesus, Potter.
I know.
What more do you want?
More. That's what I want. Right?
Yo, we got some.
No, shut up. Hey, fuck you, dude. I'm not gonna let you talk shit about me. God damn, you work at KFC.
sir, do you want more episodes of this show? We got an ungrateful asshole.
Yo,
not appreciating our art.
This series, this season touches on. It starts at the death of. It starts at the death of Big N Tupac, and then works into. Like Outkast, and those last two episodes about Outkast are
that's cool,
phenomenal. I'm telling you, man. Like,
I like how after you said Outkast, I was like, go on.
It is, man.
Shout out Georgia.
So good. So check those out. So Hip Hop Evolution season 3, The Mind Explained, and then ABBQ. That's all I've got, and I think we're at a good stopping point for this episode. This was a lot of fun, man.
Yeah.
Like, damn, I miss you guys. I missed you guys. Do you guys have
your first thing?
We
got an insincere motherfucker.
Do you guys have anything to share or say to the fans or whatnot? Oh. Ashley, you got anything to
the fans?
To plug?
Like personally?
Last comments. Right,
guys,
last
I'd like you guys to please come to my house. We'd like to get some really, really freaky.
You know Warren's going to jump on that one.
That's fine.
Ashley, what do you got? You got any last comments, closing comments?
I'm good. It's just nice all 4 of us be together again.
I do, actually. I know I tend to be... labeled as a curmudgeon, as a piece of shit.
Wow.
That's right. I'm going to tuck that character away for a few seconds, if I may.
Yes.
I'm going to tuck that character away for a few seconds and say, I really hope that people enjoy the show as much as we like, I guess, making it. And I feel actually very proud of the intro that I did with Chris.
So you're championing yourself?
No, I'm championing people.
That's pretty.
I'm trying to champion the listeners.
I'm kidding.
Because I think the approach that we've all kind of tried to take with the show is we want to try and make the show that we all want to listen to. And if you stick with us, we're only going to get better. So that's all.
Are you dying?
Yeah.
Oh.
Nah, he's about to.
Hold on. I'm back. All right. I've rubbed my dick in some dirt, and now I'm ready to be fucking.
He's about to copy and paste that George Perez.
I feel like I'm the ODB of the podcast.
There's a really good season of Wu-Tang on Hip Hop
Evolution. Are you watching it?
I've only watched episode one.
Okay. I've watched the new Wu-Tang show.
All the way through?
Hulu. So far, everything that they've put out.
Damn. I'm only on finish one.
Shit's delicious.
I'm not going to lie. A part of me was not going to tell you that because I was like, he's going to get mad if I don't watch it with him.
No.
But now you watch it without me.
I did.
Wow.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, wow.
For the woo butter?
Nah.
For the woo?
It's pretty good. Mm. Pretty damn. I'm enjoying any hip hop, anything we get on the shows.
If you guys like Wu-Tang Clan, that show takes some liberties.
Yeah, a lot. But yeah.
And like they make it seem like it's
Meet at a monastery?
Yeah.
No, they make it seem like it's like a gangster drama. Like way more of a gangster drama than I feel like I care about. Like I more or less don't give a shit about.
So it's all reenacted stuff or do they cut away?
No, they try to add some drama aspect to it.
No, it's like they get guys to play the different characters.
Oh.
And it's just told like you're watching Breaking Bad. Like, it's just a story. Oh. Like, this is how the RZA met fucking Raekwon. This is what Method Man looked like before he started rolling up his hair.
It feels like we almost started like a new episode.
Sorry.
No, that was good. I was like, oh, this got to
go. My bad.
Ed, any closing comments?
I'm doing the Fanaticon in Dothan, Alabama. And
you going to Dothan?
Dothan.
Like, of your own free will?
Well,
yeah, that's what I asked when he brought it up.
I got invited to do this convention by some very nice people.
Oh, yeah.
So I will see. It's got some pretty good guests for a small town show. Mm. So, and like it looks good as far as the design and all the promotional stuff. And I've met the guy who's running it owns like a video game / comic shop. And it's kind of his small town thing. So I'm not expecting
those are
much.
Good.
And they've told me as much. And so, but it's the small town shows are usually can be pretty fun. So we'll see. And like I said, I got invited to do it, so I got a table. So yeah, it's cool.
That's dope. That's cool, man.
Rad.
More power to him. I'll go ahead and close out by saying, once again, we're doing that podcaster meetup Wednesday, September 25th. So if you're an active podcaster or you want to learn more about podcasting or network with other local Jacksonville podcasters, come on out. We've got an event page on Eventbrite as well as the Facebook group. Or you could just message me and I'll send you the invites. And I want to go ahead and plug in our Patreon, man, because this episode was brought to you by our patrons. They voted for this episode to do a George Perez Spotlight.
You guys
episode.
Brought it on yourselves.
So if you want to partake in the next episode voting, whether it's our Artist Spotlight series or enjoy bonus episodes or enjoy merch and just all, you know, additional Shortbox content, visit patreon.com/theshortbox. See what tiers we got. Sign up and become a
Shortbox
patron.
This is something we're all trying to make take off the ground. And again, if you saw our Patreon video where I get murked by Ashley in a ski mask, which
really
is great. I'm still getting over it. This is something that we want to do for you, the listener, the not just the patron, right? We always talk about how the Short Box is not just like, oh, you guys are just listeners. Like it's a fucking family reunion. Every time we meet up, every time we go to an event, every time you guys subscribe to a different level, it's like, Botter can attest, like we all rack our brains like, oh shit, we got more people. What more can we give to them so our friends don't murder us in our place of
mailing hair samples?
Right, you know,
here,
right.
Take all of me.
So the idea being that's why we try to make these episodes as best as possible. There I am trying to be genuine again. Fuck it, I need to be the mean guy again.
Next month's Patreon bonus package will include a Popeye's chicken sandwich. All right,
so. Yo,
yeah, right. The bitches are sold out.
You can supply your own bread though.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, yeah. Bring your own bun to the Short Box Nation.
Well said. And to our True Believer tier patrons, man, you know, next month we'll be ramping up the next Artist Spotlight voting. So we'll have those nominations and those candidates up real soon. Once again, thank you guys so much for voting and picking such a stellar artist. With that being said, man, I want to go ahead and say thank you so much to the longtime listeners. See you next week. And tell your friends, man, or tell your favorite nerds about us. Help us grow the show. And to our new listeners, don't let this be the last time you come hang out with the Short Box crew. All right?
Right.
Thank you so much for listening. Catch you next week.
Yo, what happened to peace?
Peace.